This is the Valley Outdoors, and we are glad you guys are with us today. We've got a lot of fun stories to talk about, and one such proposal that might end some big game hunting in Canada coming down the pipe. That and more when we return with more Valley Outdoors. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies?
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Good to see you, Don.
Yeah, good to be here.
Ava?
I'm here.
Yeah, and we are all here. Eric, that's me. I'm here too. So it's the trio of us.
Yeah, it's always good to see you.
Well, it's always good to be seen.
Yes.
I think that's the other bonus part about it. You know what else is good to be seen, Don? We kind of talked a little bit about it off air. Spring.
Oh, yes.
When spring is sprung, the fun begins, or the fun begun. There you go.
It can, yes.
At the launch ramps especially, if anybody knows what I'm talking about, if you've ever watched a launch ramp in spring, yeah.
It can be entertaining. We were just looking for something we're going to say. What's the kind of tip we're going to talk about
tip?
This week? And I go, you know, have you seen what's going on at the launch ramps? You know, and you've had a couple stories.
Last week.
I've got one.
Last week, I was sitting at the ramp, and a couple older gentlemen were backing up their boat. One guy was waving him down the ramp. Come on, keep her coming, keep her coming. Well, he stopped a little bit, and the boat kept coming right off the trailer and right onto the ramp.
Right onto the runway.
And the best part about that was I watched the winch spin violently because it was still hooked up to the boat, but the lever was
locked.
Let go. However, and usually what happens when this happens is the gentleman in the back of the boat's, whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, the guy driving thought he was saying, go, go, go. So what does he do? He pulls forward, and now the boat is on, fully on the ramp, not just the back end.
Yeah.
So we had to crank the thing.
You know, the one thing you don't want to do is grab that crank when that's happening, though.
Oh, no. You break things.
Yeah.
Things done.
You're not going to stop it.
Yep. It's not good. So they cranked it back up. We had five guys sit on the front of the boat so we could crank it on the rollers a little bit further. I backed it down after they hairpinned it, you know, jackknifed the trailer.
Sure.
We got it into the water, and they just proceeded to head out and go fishing.
Well, I'm sure he's
gotta shake it off.
Got a couple of rug burns on it.
The engine's missing a couple parts, but apparently they got them to where they wanted to go.
Yeah, well, in our area, they don't have to go real far right now.
No, you don't. So your story.
Well, this happened a few years back, and I've probably told this story before, but launching, you know, this time of year where you have those freezing
nice
overnights,
yeah,
and sometimes early morning. Well, we literally were going to be pre-fishing for a early tournament. And I was with another gentleman, and this didn't happen to us. We were waiting to launch. And a gentleman in a big fiberglass boat, I won't mention any brands.
Right.
Anyway, he backs his
it
boat.
It might reflect what the owners of
right
those boats do.
Yeah. He backed his boat into the water and realized it wasn't coming off the trailer. Then he realized he didn't take the tie downs in the back of the boat off. So he pulls it up the ramp. Now, keep in mind, the water's pouring out and out of the trailer. And it was a bunk trailer. Takes the tie downs down, off,
right,
backs the boat back in. In the meantime, that boat froze to the trailer. So he pulls and backs the boat into the water, but the trailer is still pulls the boat down under the water. So he literally filled, he had level water above the transom into the back of the boat. pulls it on. It was really cold this morning.
Oh, no.
And he tried to get all the plugs pulled on it to get the water out of the thing, but he ended up just going back up the hill and I think putting it back in his garage. I'm sure his batteries and everything are underwater, so you got to think it through here. I'm sure it was the first of the season.
Well, and that happens a lot of the early tournaments that we've fished before. We've had it where the boats are stuck. You take the straps off, leave the front connected, and then you drive over curves, no joke, to
bounce them?
Bounce the boat off the trailer and separate it so you can launch it. And so many times you see, especially it's dark out early morning, you stop if you have it disconnected like you normally do, because when we're running bunk trailers, we always unhook it. But be cautious, number one, when you're at the ramp.
I'd have to believe most people don't think about that, especially if you got a bunk trailer. A roller trailer is different. But a bunk trailer, I don't know that people really think about that when the temperature is below 32. I think the morning we were out there was like 10 degrees. You got to ask yourself what you're doing there to begin with.
Well, and I think the other thing comes true when you're dealing with people that this time of year, their first time back out or first time boat and first time friends with you that may not be as cognizant of what needs to be and doesn't need to be. Oh, you didn't unhook the trailer. I'm not supposed to unhook the trailer. Look what happened. So those kinds of things are what you really have to focus on. Be safe. Be methodical. Think about what you're doing before you get on the water. And don't forget the life jackets, especially this time of year.
Oh,
very, very important.
Yep. Water's cold yet.
Yeah. It's.
If you're lucky enough to have open water where you're at.
Whatever river you might be going on, that's the big thing.
Yep.
So check that out. That's important. So real quick story, kind of a neat one, out of Maryland. Don, I don't know if you saw this story.
I haven't.
Massive, massive muskie. It broke a 2017 record of the largest muskie in Maryland, in the Potomac River. It's been the first fishing record that's been set so far this year, and they were fishing along the banks of the Potomac River. It was 55 and a quarter inches, and it weighed 33 pounds, and you want to talk about a large muskie that qualifies.
Yeah, that's 55 inches, a nice muskie.
It was
anywhere.
Yeah. And bank fishing too. Normally you don't have muskie that you catch on the bank, so there's not much leverage.
You can run out of line.
You can't go anywhere.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think he was expecting that to bite, so it may very well have been a non-species specific rod and reel combo, which means lighter line than you expect and a lot longer fights. So pretty cool. And you know, and the fun part about, you've fished muskie before.
You know, I have, but it's been limited. Typically I catch them by accident.
Yeah, it can be. And that's a lot of times when you get some pretty decent fish.
Yep.
When you target them a couple times that we were up in Canada, you know, I caught a 55 incher and you don't know who hooked who.
Yeah.
You're literally hooked onto a freight train, and getting it in, and that's a whole other story on top of it. So, we'll tell you what, folks. We are going to take a break, and we are going to come back, and we're going to talk with Mr. Tim Winterhalter from the Sports Show, talking about Mega Live and a lot of the cool things that they've updated and have ready to rock and roll for the new Mega Live system for Minn Kota and Hummingbird. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Well, we're at the year end, I should say year beginning event, but the last event of the show season down here at the Minneapolis Sports Show. And just wandering the show, checking things out, you would not believe the cool stuff that I'm seeing down here. And one of the cool things is checking it out at the Hummingbird Minn Kota booth. And one of my good buddies, Tim, lots of changes going on within what's going on, the electronic side and the sonar imagery and live. Everybody has a quote unquote the live thing.
Correct.
And Hummingbird's really come out with the coolest live thing ever.
Yeah.
Mega Live. Fill me in. What is it all about?
Well, basically, Mega Live, we went with a whole different manufacturer of the live transducer. I think we partnered with a company called Oculus. They did a lot of commercial underwater imaging. Basically, it's a one-phase array instead of a three-phase array like everybody else. So it's one beam of sonar, no dead spots, no black box. It's run through the transducer. The transducer processes the signal. It can be hooked up to any 8 and above helix, any Solex, any Apex. And you can do forward mode, down mode, and a perspective mode, a landscape mode out in front of the boat, and have live imaging. You can see when the bait fish are there. You can see when the walleyes are there. When they leave, you know, you see you're more efficient.
Well, that's my problem. It's when they leave.
Yeah, exactly.
I keep staying.
Yeah, and you don't have to with this.
So, and the big question, you said you're an 8. Is it it need to be a what gen series?
It just needs
because there's a gen 2.
Yep.
There's gen 3, gen 4.
Gen 3 and newer.
Okay.
And the Mega Plus imaging devices. So you can't put it on just a 2D chirp sonar unit. It's got to be a Mega Plus, either down or side image unit, 8 through 15. Apex, Solex, they all run it that way.
Well, and that's important for people that have a unit now, or maybe they, hey, I want to get this and I want to upgrade. And that would be the change or time when I can change. And I can say, okay, you know what? I got a buddy that wants to buy my 8. Mm-hmm. I'm going to upgrade, and then I can get this and then apply it later.
And if you have a Gen 2, you can display the processed image from the Gen 3 through the Ethernet to a Gen 2 and still see the image. So if you have multiple units in your boat, you don't have to buy all new. You can process it with one new one and show it on the other ones.
And that's one of the things that you and I actually had a situation last week. Yes. We were trying to figure out, we got a Gen 2 7 and a Gen 4 8. It's just a matter of adjusting transducers and getting it to work.
Correct.
So one of the things that's nice about the Hummingbird product is the flexibility within the units. So you're not totally shut out. You just adjust within the settings to get the transducer set correctly.
Yes.
If it's a Mega, then you can drop it down to a standard Hummingbird. If it's a Mega unit or similar to other units that you have.
And we can share the technologies across from SI unit to a DI unit to a 2D chirp sonar unit now via Ethernet. We don't have to have all the same technologies to be able to share. So that's really nice. That's happened in the last couple, 3 years, the last couple generations. We can share across the network now technology.
So when it comes to the Mega Live, what's the biggest, probably two or three things that makes it unique from the other units out there? What do you think would be the top three things?
Okay, one, it's one of the cleanest, clearest images I've ever seen. I mean, you can literally run everything in my boat now. I can hook up my down image, side image, Mega 360, Mega Live, and run all the units, and as long as they're Ethernet together, we alternate the ping speed, and perfectly clean image. Unbelievable.
And the ping speed is how often the signal is shot down to the bottom, comes back, and that's what gives you your image.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's really cool. It's also a single-phase array, not a multi-phase array like our competition.
Means?
No dead spots. We're not stitching images together and have dead zones in between, no ghost trees. It's all nice, clean, clear, and you don't have those dead spots at all.
I don't ever have common ghost trees. It's the trees that are actually there that I hook.
Yeah.
And then all my lines are messed up. It's not a good thing. I'll tell you about it sometime.
Yeah.
So last but not least, what do you think the last thing would be that's important with this particular technology?
I think it just makes you so much more efficient. When you're on fish, you're on fish. When they leave you, the bite's torn, all of a sudden it just goes to nothing. You look, hey, they're not there anymore. Let's move. So I used it a lot last summer, and I was amazed how it helped me stay on fish. And if they weren't there, I moved or I adjusted and found them again, found the bait, and I caught fish. And people around me were getting frustrated because I was always catching them because I was moving to stay on them, and I wasn't just sitting in the spot. I was fishing where the fish and the bait were.
So when you're looking at this transducer, it's a much different transducer.
Correct.
It's not mounted simply like the other ones on the back of the boat and stays in one spot. What kind of bracket? Are you looking at the I know a friend of mine with the Bruce City bracket that simply sips off the side of the boat.
Yep.
That's a pretty good system.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of the ways, if any of our electric steer motors are Alteras or Turovas, that's how you're doing it. You're doing it with some sort of alternative bracket, a Bruce City, a Summit, Precision Sonar. There's all kinds of them out there. And you're mounting it to it. Otherwise, you'll mount directly to our Ultrex. It hooks to the shaft of an Ultrex or a Fortrex, and you can mount it that way. But the majority of people are putting it on an aftermarket stick, and I do think you'll see things in the future that Minn Kota will develop around that particular transducer to make it more efficient, move it around in the boat, and make it a Minn Kota product or a Hummingbird product. Right now, that isn't done yet. So.
Right. You know, and one of the things I think you mentioned earlier, what makes it simple, that's what they've done, and they've actually brought to simplicity down to the 7 series this year.
Correct.
Having the presets. They didn't have that before.
And Mega Live down in the 7 now.
Exactly. Yep. And before you had to buy an 8 yep. or had to buy a 9.
Yep.
And having that capability of the touch and the options within the 7 yep. really makes that the technology you had to go in the upper side.
It's cost effective and it looks so good. The resolution's improved in the 7s and this the four, how it's run and the 2 card slots in the front now, not that single card slot on the side.
Which is nice because one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is when you're using the recording, mm-hmm. the whatever you want to call it, our recording system.
Yeah, our AutoChart Live,
right. When we hook that up, it's important. You get 8 hours roughly on yes. the unit itself.
Yes.
But as soon as you go past the 8 hours, it records over.
Yes.
So you need to have that
AutoChart zero line card. Be able to record to it while you're doing it is 30 years of mapping at 5 miles an hour. Well worth it. And nice having the second slot now on the 7 so you can use it to make your maps.
And then have your Lake Master chart in it, which is great.
Yep.
And the options that you have with changing water levels and everything, mm-hmm. it really allows you to be a better, as you said, more efficient fisherman, number one. You don't have to be a rocket scientist.
Correct.
Most people in that level, they just wanted something that's good and that reads, but now you have the options as you get better. You can add a piece apart and whatever that's going to make the system better.
Correct. You can find those spots and have a map that nobody else has of a spot Lake Master missed when they mapped it. Guess what spots are good on the lakes now?
Well, I like it so they don't have everything, Tim. Come
Correct.
On.
They,
I mean,
they don't.
My secret spots in the river, I'm not giving them away.
Correct. And you'll have them without
yep,
Chart Live.
Exactly.
And other people have no idea where that is.
And how effective it is, as an example, I was on a spot on the river that it's produced a number of big fish. And once they came out with the AutoChart Live, I drove over that same spot. Well, I had all my waypoints. The craziest part was this weird chop in, and it was a cut. It was almost a foot and a half, 2 foot cut.
Yep.
These fish were sitting on the cut.
Yep.
It lined up exactly with it, and then where it stopped, the fish stopped. It was one of those things where you end up having an incredible way to read fish, an incredible way to keep it simple, but it also tells you what you were thinking was going on, but you couldn't tell.
Yeah, and I did the same thing with bottom hardness on lakes by my house. Being able to map bottom hardness on top of over the map.
Which is so cool.
And then I look at my waypoints and how they overlaid around the bottom hardness, little extensions and stuff.
So,
amazing.
In explaining bottom hardness, we're able to see that as an adjustment within the Hummingbird
software.
Unit.
Yep.
And it is able to actually tell you what differences from transition from sand to gravel
Correct.
To rock.
And that's what your fish are traveling.
Exactly.
They're traveling transitions more than people think. It's not a drop-off. They're following the transition.
And it's all graphic. You can
yes.
see it. It's easy to understand.
Correct.
And it's about the simplicity, whether it's simplicity in navigating.
Correct. You can make your trolling motor follow that now. I mean, your iPilot Link. It's crazy.
You mean I don't have to be the Drunken Sailor driving program?
No. Correct.
That, which is just great, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not bad, though. This is one of the things, you know, and it comes in technique, is, you know, you set a parameter on your graph, and you say, I want to be within 5 feet. The fish you're catching are here.
Uh-huh.
But you want to work up and down. A good
yep.
friend of both of ours, Pete Harsh,
yes.
was, he said, don't use this, do this, and move.
Yep.
So there's a lot of different options. If you have a lot of people in the boat where you're trying to keep track of everybody else,
yep.
setter and getter, as
yep.
the saying goes.
You got it.
So, Tim, thank you very much. I yep. appreciate you taking the time. If you don't have time to get down to the sports show, check it out online at Hummingbird Minn Kota Product. There's a lot of other cool stuff out there. Adapt your system to help you catch more fish. Valley Outdoors, I'm Eric Olson, and we are out. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Kind of a knowledgeable guy, don't you think, Don?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that work.
The Mega Live?
Yep.
Yeah. The updates they did with that are absolutely outstanding. I mean, what you're seeing now is truly the deal. Impressive. Especially when you can connect it to all the other units that you've bought already.
Right.
The connectivity is what I really, really think is pretty cool, too, which is the biggest issue in electronics these days, because you buy an electronic and then you know, whatever GPS sonar system. And a lot of them, the new updates don't work on the old ones. That makes you buy a new one.
People well, get that, tired I mean, of that. I haven't had any issues with that.
Not with the Hummingbird Minn Kota stuff.
No.
With some of the other stuff.
Some of the other brands.
It's the software hasn't been adaptable as much.
Okay.
So. Story that we came out with at the top of the show, talking about the proposal that could close and restrict popular Canadian big game hunts. If this new proposal from the government of British Columbia is successful, hunters in the northeastern part of the state province could see their moose hunting opportunities reduced by 50% and complete elimination of all caribou hunting.
Okay, well, I'm interested to find out why.
Now, Don, you know what you look like there for a second? You look like Ron Shara's dog, Raven. Your head tilted, and you kind of went, huh?
Yeah.
Exactly. The proposed restriction to moose tags and the elimination of the caribou hunting for licensed Canadian hunters, excuse me, is an attempt by government officials to retroactively honor the treaty rights of the BRFN people and atone for decades of environmental degradation brought on by unsustainable mining, drilling, and timber harvesting operations. Critics within Canada's conservation community say it misses the mark. Rather than deal with the restoration work, they decided to offer concessions on licensed hunting. So this is an interesting dilemma. Don't try to repopulate where it's been mining. Let's offer something else. And Mark Hall, who's a BC resident, avid hunter, and he's the host of Hunter Conservationist Podcast. He's a retired forester and environmental scientist with a wealth of knowledge in British Columbia. He said the proposal by the provincial government of British Columbia to slash moose tags and eliminate caribou altogether has caught conservationists throughout the Peace region by surprise. It blindsided everybody, and for people across the province working on collaborative tables for wildlife management, this was one that came clearly out of left field.
Way left.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hall says that there doesn't even seem to be unanimous support amongst the various nations for instituting the proposed changes to caribou and moose hunting in BC. We can't speak for the nations, and there's quite a number of them, but reliable feedback that we've been getting from people that are involved in talks up there, for some nations, this isn't even what they've asked for.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I'm not either. It's a concession, a negotiation to hopefully allow the First Nations' consent on industrial projects to continue moving forward until they or the provincial government figure out how they can start restoring some of the impacts on the land. The story continues. About 25, 30 years ago, prices were up with various industrial environment pieces that they had. So they were looking at natural gas, etc. A whole bunch of natural gas exploration started and a massive scale. The province was promoting the industry. They were giving permits. Companies were coming in. It was big. And Hall worked in that area. He flew over it, and you can literally see seismic lines that go all over the curvature of the earth. What baffled people is the judge said they need to fix the industrial impacts. He said rather than the province saying to the nations, let's start fixing, he said let's cut the residential moose hunters in half. It's not science-based wildlife management decisions. After we lost a grizzly bear hunt, which they quit that, and British Columbia, and that was due to a non-science-based wildlife management decision. Again, we're hoping it wouldn't happen is what the quote was. Licensed resident hunters spend a lot of money, including sporting goods stores, etc., as you know, and both of us know. The lost revenue from license sales could result in a loss of $14 to $19 million per year just in that region.
Well, evidently the herds are down. And I think they're trying. I mean, it seems like more of an appeasement than a solution to the problem.
Well, actually, Don, what was surprising when I read the article, I didn't go into every detail about it, but what ends up turning out is certain areas had pieces and parts that were, but they were not in a overall down. It was significantly up in a number of regions, and only some of them were down. So again, it was a decision based not on the actual wildlife and what was going on within that area. So rather odd, I would say. So what do you think?
I'm not going to think on that one.
We'll let her go and see what happens.
Well, you're going to have to.
I agree. This will be right up your alley.
Okay.
Yep. Five things that you may be getting wrong about shotguns.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. Number one, shot, meaning shot.
Yep.
All of the shot. It strings out of a barrel, meaning like on a rope.
No, it doesn't.
Nope. You're right. And why that matters, shot stringing is only an issue in the longer shooting. With shorter shots, you need to worry about that because shot strings elongate as the shot flies downrange. And they needn't concern you in the close-in shots. Normal hunting ranges of 25 to 30 yards. They're short enough. You don't have to worry about that.
Right.
Number two.
All right.
A lighter shotgun gets on target faster.
True.
Even at nearly 8 pounds, a Beretta Outlander Sporting will not slow you down. The hunters dote on light guns because they come up quick and they're faster than heavier guns, except they aren't faster. A few years ago, they conducted a test with four shooters. They shot five straightaway targets apiece as fast as they could from a low gun start with three different guns, 6 3/4 pound, 20 gauge, 870 Express, a 7 1/2 pound, 12 gauge, 870, and the same 12 gauge, 870 with 15 ounces of weight added. The fast 20 gauge averaged 0.98 seconds from release, the 7 1/2 pound, 0.91, and the other one was a 15 ouncer was 0.77. Wrong, Don. It's the reverse.
I don't buy that.
Getting on target. It's the way it is. Seriously.
I'm not buying it.
We're going to follow up with the other three because this is intriguing, Don. Everybody wants to know about shots, right? That's
right.
Important. So we'll continue with the other pieces of this puzzle next week. There you go. There's a tease for you.
Come on,
love back. It. All right. For Ava, Don, myself, we are the Valley Outdoors, and we're pretty excited you guys are joining us. No matter where you're at, Michigan to North Dakota, South Dakota, all over the Midwest. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week.